America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Good afternoon, Central Florida, and what a beautiful Sunday afternoon, Father's Day it is, folks. Nostra Dennis sitting in Lair Adams' seat for our three-hour tour with the American adversaries. Lair usually opens the show, but he is not here today. Johnny Guns is not here today. He's over on the other side of the state, pampering his dad for Father's Day. Carl Jackson, just the opposite. He's at home being pampered by Betsy and Taylor. And Lair, well, Lair's whereabouts are on a need-to-know basis, and folks, trust me, you don't need to know. Now, you know, our president has a reputation for asking for the short version of every pressing issue he doesn't enjoy dealing with. So he was told late last week that he announced that he'd be sending the USS George H.W. Bush over to the Persian Gulf to show our strength to the rest of the world. Well, he just read the cliff notes of that and he got confused. He thought we were actually sending George H.W. Bush. So he said, make sure you parachute him to the roof of the Baghdad Hilton. Make sure he's wearing that bandana like Rambo. That'll show everyone. Speaking of presidents, this just in from Jeff Sennis. Do you know who was elected president of the Cauliflower Alley Club for Retired Wrestlers?
I do.
Our very own friend, B. Brian Blair. Now, we already know another presidential tough guy. That's Mike McBath, the president of the NFL Retired Players Association. If only we knew Barack Obama, then we would still know two presidential tough guys. Here, sitting across from me in the Mercury Free Broadcast Studios tonight, is a guy who is not a president of anything, but even liberals have to admit he's a tough guy. Tough to outwit, even with three-quarters of his brain tied behind his back, our host, Christopher Hart.
Ah, thank you so very much there, Nostra Dennis. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us on this fine Sunday afternoon here in Central Florida. That's right, you are listening to the American Adversaries Classic, as Nostra Dennis likes to say. Our Sunday night three-hour tour is just getting started. And that's right, the other guys are out celebrating Father's Day. Lair's daughter had something special designed all set up for him today. So, Nostra Dennis, you spent some time this weekend with your daughter?
Well, I did. In fact, yesterday was Father's Day for me because my wife had to work all day today.
Yeah.
So we had a little movie time. We went and saw the How to Train Your Dragon movie.
Cool.
Opened up some presents, some baseball cards. That's always fun.
All right.
Got some beef sticks. And what father doesn't like beef sticks, right? Got some clothes, which were very nice. I'm going to wear them into to work tomorrow. Today, I got breakfast for afternoon lunch from my daughter, Denise. She cooked them up for me, some eggs, some bacon. Perfect.
Excellent.
Best Father's Day weekend ever.
All right. I hope you folks out there are having a great Father's Day weekend as well. And it is Nostra Dennis and I in the studio tonight. Of course, we have our ever-dependable and capable Jeff Sennis on the bridge tonight.
Howdy.
There he is. So if you'd like to call, give us a call at 407-774-8255. We are live coming to you from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios, like Nostra Dennis said. And remember, for the best in mercury-free dentistry, call Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. Now, the Rays are presently playing the Houston Astros. It was late in the game, but it was a tie game, so yeah. we'll keep an eye on it.
They're deciding which one of them stinks less, and right now, it's a toss-up.
It's a toss-up. Anyway, David Price is pitching a decent game, but nonetheless, the Rays are playing, so if you're listening to us on the airways, you're listening on 1520 WBZW, and we appreciate appreciate that. And as soon as we do go back up on AM 660 The Answer, we will be certain to let you know so that you can, if you choose to do so, go back down there where, of course, we have a brand new and much stronger transmitter and signal. So hopefully you can appreciate that as well. And if you're not listening on 1520 WBZW, it means that you're listening online via your smart device or computer, and we appreciate that as well.
And in that case, just stay right where you are. You don't have to press a button.
You don't have
to do a thing.
The next
3 hours, just stay there.
You don't have to do a thing. You are all set to go. And we're all set to go tonight. We're going to be talking about the lost email. I don't know if you've heard about it yet, but I'm sure you will be hearing about it.
You say that like there's one of them.
Yeah. It's much more than that, though.
Tens of thousands.
Yes. We don't know because they are lost.
Well, sure.
And we got Nostradamus has got some past lined up for us. We got some WTF news, even though Johnny Guns isn't here. And if he does show up, then we'll have twice as much WTF news.
WTF, WTF.
There you go. We're going to talk about Iraq, Bo, and Boko. That would, of course, be the situation in Iraq and the situation, not so much about Bo Bergdahl, but about the prisoners that were released in exchange, quote-unquote, exchange for him. Because I'm becoming more and more suspicious that we didn't so much exchange those prisoners as that we actually paid a ransom.
There were two separate events that were tied together in public.
I do think so. And we're going to talk about Boko Haram, and we're going to talk about a fellow by the name of Abu al-Baghdadi. And I hope that you'll stick around for that, because that'll be in the second hour. We have a Who Said That quote, so you'll be able to win a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano and a T-shirt from My Liberty Threads. Patricia, our sunny California girl, is going to be with us. And later on that hour, in the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to have Danielle Alexander from the Liberty News Network, who's going to be with us. I met her the other day at the center-right coalition meeting, and theirs is a fascinating watchdog organization, and you're going to be fascinated. Well, I don't know if you will be so fascinated or surprised since you listen to us at the weak nature of conservatism in the Florida legislature.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much, for people who listen to our show and might agree with us, I think that's not going to be new news to them, but she will be good to listen to.
Yeah, and she'll give you a good grasp of the depth of the problem, if you will. And also Grant Malloy will be with us. He's one of the founders of the Center-Right Coalition, and give us a little wrap-up on the Seminole County vote. And some sort of very interesting statistics when you look at it in hindsight. And so we'll talk about that in the second half hour of the last hour of our show tonight. And, of course, Lair has recorded some closing comments for us. So even though he won't be here, we will still be the beneficiaries of his Sunday night wisdom. So, but first, before we really get going, you know, yesterday was Flag Day. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't really appreciate it. This is the 200th this year. It's the 200th anniversary of the writing of the Star Spangled Banner by, now I always thought it was Francis Scott
Key.
Yeah,
right. He did. He didn't.
Yeah,
he didn't write the lyrics.
Well, I was listening to, and I'm pretty sure it was Fox News yesterday, and one of the anchors, or maybe it wasn't the anchor. Maybe it was, no, I think it was someone who, a reporterette who was doing the story was calling him Francis Key Scott.
What? No.
And, yeah, I was scratching my head going,
no.
Francis Key Scott.
That's not right.
am I getting, you know, am I going the Sterling route here?
No, you're not. You're not losing it. He's always been Scott Key to me.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. So yesterday was kind of a special Flag Day, you know, being that it is the 200th anniversary of, you know, the Fort McHenry battle there, and Francis Scott Key writing the poem. What was at that time a poem?
Right. Now, he wrote the words, and the music to just about every patriotic song comes from an old English drinking song. So I'm sure the music for this song comes from an old English drinking song.
And,
they had a lot of them.
But this coming Saturday is Eagle Day.
It is. I know that especially because in today's paper, if you look at the Seminole Extra, what is the spotlight event? Saturday, American Eagle Day. They're going to have a special celebration at a place my daughter volunteers at every Saturday, the Avian Reconditioning Center, otherwise known as ARC. They're at 323 West Lester Road in Apopka. They're going to have snacks and refreshments available. It is free admission, but they encourage and appreciate and welcome donations. They are on West Lester Road. That's kind of off of Vic Road out towards, it's not in the hinterlands, but it's right off of the road that Main Street Park Avenue turns into.
What was it, like northeast, northwest of downtown?
It's north of the high school.
North of the Apopka High
School. About a mile north of Apopka High. And you get to meet not one, not two, but three bald eagles. So if you look at the picture here, it's a nice patriotic shot of Ike.
Yeah.
Whose real name, by the way, is Isaiah, but his nickname is Ike. He is one of three that they've got there that that are permanently injured. They're never going to be released into the wild. The other two are called Windy and Stormy because they were blown out of their nest as eaglets and have grown up with injured wings.
Oh.
And they are beautiful animals to look at. They just can't fly anymore. And they've got all kinds of animals there. They got owls. They got a vulture, Vinny the Vulture.
Yeah, you were telling us about Vinny the other day.
Vincent Van Vulture was his name, but they've changed it since to Vincent Priceless because he's a little baby.
Yeah, turkey vulture.
Mrs. P, Hunter, Little Lucy, they're all going to be there. And it's a really, really a fun place. It's nothing fancy, but, you know, they've got them all up there for display. You can read each of their backstories that all the volunteers know.
Where
all
is this again?
It is from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. this Saturday, June 21st, American Eagle Day at ARC, Avian Reconditioning Center. What I'll do is I'll go up on Facebook tomorrow and I'll put on our Facebook page a link to their website so you can get more information about it. And it's a fun place to spend a little time. Bring the kids. It's going to be fun.
All right. So that'll be a great way to celebrate Eagle Day next weekend. And don't forget, you know, what you can do is listen to Carl Jackson's show first thing Saturday morning and then go out to the Aviary Arc and celebrate Eagle Day. So that'd be a great way to spend a day. And, of course, Carl and Mickey do a great job every Saturday morning. They weren't on there yesterday. They had a couple of guys filling in. It wasn't the same, you know,
I'll
without
tell you
Carl.
What.
But
with no Carl, the Carl Jackson show is just a little bit different.
Yeah.
But it was fun trying to fill in for him, wasn't it?
So don't forget to catch Carl Jackson. And, of course, Marshall Polston, you can catch him as you're leaving ARC at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
Nice little window of opportunity.
Yes, you can sandwich it in really nicely there. That'd be a great way to spend your Saturday. Just while we're at it, tomorrow we're going to have David Smith on the show. And, of course, he's running for Congress here. And that race is, I believe, only going to get more and more interesting, in particular because of what happened to Eric Cantor up in Virginia. John Micah is sort of cut from the same mold as Eric Cantor. But the difference is now the element of surprise is gone.
That's
but
right.
David Smith is a strong candidate, and he'll be with us tomorrow.
He'll be with us, and he could be our next congressman if enough people put their support and their buckaroos behind him. We are the American Adversaries, and this just in, Johnny Guns. He'll be with us in the next segment.
All right.
Stick around.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you are listening to the American Adversaries, and as soon as we go up on AM 660, the answer will definitely let you know. It'll be a little while yet, though, because I believe the game is yet to wrap up. But we are here live with you, and we will be here live until 8 o'clock. And don't forget, at that time, we're going to turn it over to actually a couple of great shows. You'll have your choice, so you can do like me. You can sneak up the dial to 950 WTLN and listen to the John Butler Book Show. He's going to be live from 8 to 9 tonight, and he's going to have a couple of guests on his show, which we'll actually introduce you to on the tail end of our show. Grant Malloy, I'm sure you know Grant if you've been listening to our show. If you don't, you'll get a chance to meet him. And also Danielle Alexander and of Liberty News Network. So you can do that. And, of course, you have Armed American Radio live right here on AM 660, The Answer, from 8 to 11. And Mark Walters and his team do a great show. All right, and another member of our team has indeed entered the studios. Johnny Guns is with us tonight. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
Hey, Johnny, you're sitting in Carl's corner there.
Yes, I am. It feels nice and cozy here in his corner.
All right. And, folks, folks. Of course, you can be a part of the tonight show as well. 407-774-8255 is the number. And keep that phone close because, of course, we will be doing the Who Said That contest later. And you never know when we may jump up and give away a couple of free bottles of Roxy Pacifics, the great stuff. It's all new natural kelp water, antibacterial, anti-inflammatory, good for whatever ails your skin. I call it fertilizer for your skin because it makes it grow healthily. And it's enhanced with vitamins and minerals that really makes the chemical composition just right for your skin. Okay, I want to talk a few minutes about the lost email. You know, this was revealed Friday, so the media, of course, has had a great chance to ignore it so far. We'll see how far they continue to do that, but it's pretty substantial stuff. And not only was it revealed that Lois Lerner's emails for some 2 years were quote-unquote lost when a computer crashed, and I always thought, you know, now I don't know much about this technical stuff. Now, you guys know a lot more than I do. Okay, all right, enough of that. But isn't it true that these computer forensics experts can take a crashed computer and retrieve the information that was quote-unquote lost?
Well, once you've lost something and hit delete, it's gone forever. No one will ever see it ever, ever, ever.
Wait, survey says...
opposite of.
Yeah, right. So in other words, they can, in at least many cases.
If they really want to.
Yeah.
See, that's the operative word there.
All right. Well, hopefully the FBI will look into those computers if they still exist.
Well, wait, who runs the FBI right now?
Yeah, that's right. The Justice Department, so that would be Eric Holder.
Eric Withholder.
Eric Withholder. That's right. Fast and Furious fame, as well as other things. But nonetheless, that is the story that the computer crash, I think they say, happened in 2009. And for the next 2 years of Lois Lerner's emails, they don't have anything. And, of course, that would be the time when the Tea Party was coming into fruition, right?
And a lot of local groups putting themselves out there with words like Tea Party in their name,
exactly.
Words like conservative,
right.
Words like American Revolution.
Right, and this would, of course, been the time when the IRS was formulating its policy as though it didn't already have one, according to these groups. And, of course, they did already have one. The law was pretty specific. And in some of the cases, I must say, the Tea Party put themselves at jeopardy of being turned down. And what the IRS should have done, though, is just went ahead and turned them down and told them why they were turning them down instead of turning it into an investigation and drawing it out.
Well, by drawing it out, you're kind of freezing them. You're keeping them from doing anything.
Exactly my point. All right, so you read my mind there. That is exactly what they were trying to do, was to hogtie these people. Not eliminate them so much as a group, but to hogtie them so that they couldn't do anything and tie up their resources. And that's exactly what they did. And now we don't know. Because, you know, on her end of it, unless, of course, they can retrieve these documents, what was going on. But now, however, there were 12,000 non-profit tax returns that Ms. Lerner did manage to get over to the FBI. So, in other words, not the emails that we're talking about, but separately, 12,000 returns. These would be the people now that she's auditing. In other words, she's under review and auditing their returns. Not just reviewing their applications for the 501c4 or whichever number, you know, application that they're putting in, but their tax returns.
These are the people who filed them as personal tax returns?
Some of them, yes.
Yeah.
12,000 nonprofit tax returns, which in some cases would include the people's tax returns, to the FBI and inviting them to join in the investigation.
Because if you remember, a couple of months ago, we had Catherine Engelbrecht on from True the Vote.
Yeah.
And she said that not only did True the Vote's books get reviewed and audited by the IRS, so did her own personal tax returns, and so did a company her husband owns that has nothing at all to do with True the Vote.
Right, exactly. You know, and because the IRS thinks this way, in their mind, they're thinking, well, we have to check all of these things out to make sure that there's not something underhanded going on here. Right, their assumption is you're guilty, so they have to check everything out to prove otherwise, or you have to prove otherwise to them. But in the process, she invited the criminal division of the government to, in, you know, get involved in this, which is purely a tax matter. You know, it isn't as though these people were coming up with some way to defraud the government. They were simply applying for tax status.
We're asking for a specific status.
Exactly. Right. And the IRS could easily have denied it, and they had the wherewithal to do that. The cases weren't that particularly gray area cases. I can remember back in the day, I haven't done it for a long time, but I remember back in the day, sometimes people would come to me when I was preparing taxes and ask me about tax-exempt status, and I could go right to the book, and the book would very clearly tell you what you could and couldn't do. It wasn't as though nobody knew. So, in other words, say a 501c4 nonprofit group, the tax code will tell you, basically, okay, this is what you can do, and if you do this, then that is not compliant with the exemption.
So you can create several groups, some that can do things within the purvey of that authorization, and some that you can do other things with.
Exactly.
501c3, c4, nonprofit, LLC,
right.
All kinds of
right.
things.
Right, and you can save yourself a whole lot of trouble by not going the nonprofit route at all, all right, because it you can see.
Right.
A lot of these organizations, I'm not going to say that they brought this on themselves, but I will say that
they left themselves open for an easy hit by the government.
Exactly. Yeah. They let their guard down, basically. But in pursuit of what, you know, was the common thinking of the way to do it. This is the way you do it. That is typical of tax policy, too. You know, people get in the mind there, this is the way you do it. And it isn't necessarily always the best for you, the way you do it.
No, but the way you do it in a lot of cases is, this is the way you do it without raising the standard red flags that will cause them to come back and audit you.
All right. Okay. And the way you do it, folks, is that you listen through the breaks, because we've got one coming up now. At least I hope you do. We appreciate it, if you will, because we've got a hard break coming up. When we come back, I'll just finish out this little conversation about Lois Lerner, and then we'll get to some news from the past from Nostradamus. And shortly after that, Johnny Gunn's going to have one or two WTF news stories for us.
It's the American Adversaries. It's Sunday night. We miss you, Carl. We miss you, Lair. We miss you, Lucas.
Yeah.
We miss you, garlic pizza from Positano's. But the three of us hungry guys and Jeff in there, we are all
live.
The Lar. Where's the Lar?
The Lar.
The new president of the Cauliflower Alley Club.
Yeah.
OMB Brian Blair. We're going to have to get him back on to congratulate him about that. All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries Sunday evening 3-hour tour coming to you on WTLN. No,
we're not.
WPZW 1520. Yeah. Sorry, got the numbers wrong there.
I think there's some preacher talking on that station right now. But preach on.
There
go
you
ahead.
Go.
Testify.
And when we do go back up on AM 660, The Answer, we'll let you know. So if you're not listening on the internet or your smart device, we'll keep you updated on that. Christopher Hart, Nostradamus, and Johnny Gunn, we're live in the studio with you. 407-774-8255 is the number. I just want to give you a couple more details about this Lois Lerner story. Her computer crashed in 2011 and took out pretty much the prior 2 years emails with it. And evidently, she supposedly tried to get their people to rebuild the hard drive, and they were unsuccessful. So whether even the hard drive exists anymore or is in whose possession, I don't know at this moment.
They did get her solitaire and her Minesweeper up and running again, but the emails, gone.
And by the way, when she turned these 12,000 nonprofit tax returns over to the FBI, she not only invited them to, you know, begin their own fishing, as the Wall Street Journal calls it, fishing expedition, she also began to give them the different statutes that could be used to pursue prosecution. Statutes that included campaign finance laws and other things, and even suggested that they might charge with what's called a 371 charge against nonprofits. I feel like Barney Fife right now is 371.
Yeah, you're going to get charged with 371 there, Andy.
371 is part of the United States Justice Code that allows prosecutors to broadly claim, it's kind of like the RICO Act, it allows prosecutors in this case, though, to broadly claim a conspiracy to defraud the United States government. So, in other words, what she was saying is that all of these groups were basically conspiring to defraud the United States government, and that that would be one possibility that the FBI might want to pursue against these. And let me just finish out. The IRS has admitted that the database included confidential taxpayer information, including donor details, this is what we were talking about in the last segment, for at least 33 nonprofits. That would include, of course, the private, as you were talking about, Catherine Engelbrecht. She would have been one of those 33. Of course, the IRS claims it was inadvertent. The Justice Department, which, of course, is headed by Eric Withholder, is claiming that none of this was actually used in a criminal investigation. But nonetheless, the information did go back and forth. And this was, by the way, not discovered by any committee that is being conducted in the House, including the Oversight Committee. They're having to subpoena justice, but much of this information came because of the group Judicial Watch filing Freedom of Information Act requests.
You know, if we know anything about the Tea Party, it's that they don't really conspire to do much of anything. In a lot of ways, Tea Party people out there, I know there's a lot of you. I'm making a comparison just for illustrative purposes. They're a lot like Al-Qaeda sleeper cells in that they do their own thing within their own group. And they really don't have a lot of communication with other groups in other places.
It is very loosely organized.
And designed that way.
Yeah. I don't know if it's designed that way, but it certainly has worked out
Why change
Which is why my analysis is that the quote-unquote Tea Party is not so much a party in the classic sense as it is a political mood in the land, which is causing people to get up out of their seats and go to meeting places and things like that. And by the way, speaking of that, the Greater Orlando Tea Party is having their meeting Tuesday at the Eastmont Civic Center over there, Ronald Reagan, right off 436, just south of 436, Tuesday night at 7. And our friend Dr. John Matusitz is going to be there speaking about terrorism and communications.
Terrorism in general.
Exactly, which, of course, includes Islamic terrorism. So he'll be there Tuesday night. But Nasser Dennis is absolutely right. They're very loosely organized. But that's not what Lois Lerner wanted to impress upon the FBI. In other words, she was simply trying to make trouble, as much as trouble as possible, for all of these groups. Now, according to her, this was just something that they were working out at her level of organization, and it didn't come from above. I'm not so sure that that's not true or not, but we need to know, and obviously there's a whole lot yet we don't know, and a whole lot that we may now never know, according to these latest findings. All right, so having said that, and that happened Friday, and of course that was in the past, and Nostradamus has
Nostradamus.
Yes.
Predicts.
Yes.
The past.
Yes. I knew you would say that, 5 Minute Professor. That's why I have this ready for you. Thank you, 5 Minute Professor. These are the stories that fell through the cracks during the week. And honestly, this past week, we've been pretty good at not letting stories fall through the cracks. There's been a lot of days this week where we've been able to get all the little ones. And, if you want to call some of our stories the little ones, but as much as we can on the air, we've done a pretty decent job of it this week. But I got a couple. Here's one. Guess who's teaming up? Two of our favorite groups, American Psychological Association and the green group called Eco America.
Oh, yeah.
And they've come up with a report that says that climate change has a significant negative impact on people's health and psychological well-being. Due to an increase in the frequency and severity of climate-related natural disasters and other climate-related changes. They say also that climate change is likely to result in an increase in post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental health conditions because of the rise of natural disasters. We could also expect, says Norman B. Anderson, the CEO of the American Psychological Association, increases in long-term stress and anxiety and increases in violence and crime as a result of higher temperatures and competition for scarce resources. The green people are crazy. The American Psychological Association is crazy. So they're good. They're good together.
Well, they got a half right. You know, climate change does not cause this sort of distress. Climate change hysteria does cause that kind of distress, and there is no question about that.
It's true.
Yep.
It's true. Hey, Friday, this past Friday, was a couple of things coming together. It was, of course, Friday the 13th. It was, of course, also a full moon.
Yep.
And I heard on Michael Medved, that's not going to happen again until 2047?
2049.
Okay. So
another 35 years.
We may all be gone by then. You just don't know. Could have been the last full moon Friday the 13th we're going to see in our lifetimes. Guess what else happened on that day? Jane Fonda was the keynote speaker at UCLA's graduation. Fonda, as we know, back in 1972, traveled to Hanoi to meet with enemy soldiers and called American soldiers war criminals. But Nick Callis, the president of the Santa Clarita chapter of Vietnam Veterans of America, told Fox News, "We hate her. We won't ever see any of her movies or support anything she did. It makes me sick to see her get this kind of recognition." Now, she has apologized since then for some of her remarks, but many veterans are not accepting the apology. Fonda was on Oprah Winfrey last year and said, "I was an emotional wreck. I made an unforgivable mistake. I don't know if I was set up or not. I was an adult. I take responsibility for my actions." Yeah.
So in other words, she's shed a few tears and now we're all supposed to, you know, feel sorry for her or something like that. No, she needs to come clean, not give us some little BS story.
Hanoi Jane, indeed.
Hanoi Jane.
And in a related story, even liberals will admit that conservatives are suppressed on college campuses, especially when it comes to speakers at commencements. Michael Bloomberg even said at Harvard last week, "Colleges are supposed to be a place where students learn how to think, not where they are told what to think." The Young America's Foundation released its 22nd annual Commencement Speakers Survey, which goes through America's top 100 colleges, who they invite as guest speakers, and whether those speakers are either liberal or conservative.
Mm-hmm.
52 of them had a political bent. How many do you think were liberal?
That actually did speak?
Out of those 52.
Probably 49.
43.
All right.
43 to 9. That's about a 5-to-1 ratio.
Yeah.
And it's important to note that Young America's Foundation is not a political organization. They've always advocated for both sides to be presented on campus, not one side or the other. But more than half of the students surveyed say professors in colleges often do not present alternative viewpoints in class when there are different sides to an issue. So if there's no debate in class, why should there be one when it comes to commencement?
Yeah, and many faculty are behind these movements to get certain speakers, you know, disinvited or make sure they aren't invited to begin with.
All it takes is a few deans to get together and decide, and we don't like this.
They should not have that much sway over the selection of the speakers. And can you imagine, now here just this season, we've seen Condoleezza Rice pull out of a commencement address. Christine Lagarde pulled out. Now, she, if you don't know, she's the head of the World Bank right now. She's a French woman. And there was another big one who was forced to pull out.
Well, each year, Ann Coulter says she gets 4 or 5 invitations and accepts them all and usually only ends up going to 1 or 2.
Yeah, because they get withdrawn when people find out.
Right.
These people are examples of achievement and should be appreciated as such. What has Jane Fonda ever really achieved? What is her secret to success? Have a famous dad?
Barbarella was really good. It was a great film, if you remember that.
Well, nonetheless, I don't think her achievement is in any way as great as, say, that of Condoleezza Rice's or Christine Lagarde's, for that matter, who's a liberal, by the way. But because she represents, you know, the big financial institutions of the world, she's not accepted amongst liberals. But nonetheless, it is a sad double standard. I guess a few people are noticing. You mentioned Michael Bloomberg, but when I see people like Condoleezza Rice pull out, I oftentimes think, I wish they wouldn't do that.
Right. But you know what? They're thinking of the graduates, because the kids who are graduating, it's their day. It really is their day. And she really didn't want to rain on their day.
Well, I can understand that point of view. But however, you know, if not her, who is going to speak? And are the kids going to get as much out of that?
Probably not.
And even if there is some disruption, would that not, you know, be in some way an experience that the kids should not be denied? Because it is the reality of the world that they live in. So, you know, they're in college. They're getting out of college. They don't need to be mollycoddled anymore. That needs to be stopped. The real world starts the very next day. So I just can't see that myself. And then you have donkeys. I would like the word, use the jack, you know what word. I suppose it's a political phrase, you know, and it does refer to a donkey. A jackass is a donkey. But then you have those sorts of guys like Barack Obama, who go to West Point, and then he went to the University of California, I guess just yesterday, or Friday or
UC
yesterday.
UC Irvine.
Yeah, UCI. And gives campaign speeches.
Yep.
I mean, what kind of commencement address is that? It's nothing more than a doggone campaign speech.
Imagine getting your degree and having to sit through a two-hour commercial.
He goes to West Point to give a quote-unquote policy address for a commencement speech? If I was a West Point graduate, I'd have been PO'd too, just for that fact. Not to mention the fact the guy's a lousy leader in the doofus.
They don't give the cadets live ammo at graduation. They don't. Not saying if they should, but
All right. Okay, when we come back, we're going to be treated to a little bit of WTF news by our man Johnny Guns. So please do not go away. Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries, and we are coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios.
Yeah, don't be listening when you're talking. You can get very confused. It's like singing the national anthem. It comes back at you.
Yeah, going like putting two mirrors facing one another, infinity, right?
Yeah, it might be fun, but it'll make your brain
hurt. Disturbing, yes. All right, talking about fun and a little disturbing, that's WTF News.
Yes,
so why don't we go to that right now?
That's a perfect intro right there. A little disturbing. Some people might say a lot disturbing. So here's a question for you guys. If you lived next to someone who, let's say, didn't share your political views, you know, what would you do? I mean, would you kind of do anything in, say, retaliation?
I've been there. I've done that. I put up the high fence.
Now you have dogs, right?
I do now. Yeah, where I live now. I used to live back in the day up in New York. Just put a fence up between me and my neighbor, because good fences make good neighbors.
See, I tried to re-educate this person until she threw me out of her yard.
Now, let's just say, for example, you know, there's a proposed dog park to be put up, okay?
Nice. Right.
And then let's say your neighbor opposes it and puts a sign out there. Would you, by chance, if you were a neighbor in favor of the dog park, maybe throw dog poop in your neighbor's yard?
That would be adversarial.
That would be.
That would be awful nasty.
That's what actually happened in San Marino, California. And not only did the guy get caught throwing dog poop onto his neighbor's lawn, the guy who threw it onto his neighbor's lawn is the mayor.
Wow.
First of all, why did he just let the dog deposit it there to begin with?
Oh, wait. We will get to this.
Okay, all right.
This is what we call a little foreshadowing here. San Marino Mayor Dennis Neer can be seen tossing a sealed bag of dog poop.
Well, it was sealed.
Onto the...
Hermetically?
Oh, but how did it get in the bag?
Yes.
Can be seen throwing the dog poo into the private walkway of his neighbor, Philip Lau. The incident was caught on surveillance footage at Lau's house. In the video, Neer's wife points at the walkway, and then he tosses the bag. Here's the beautiful thing. The Neers don't own a dog.
Okay.
Where... they get
that's the next
exactly.
Question. Yes.
Said the mayor.
Are we sure it's dog poop?
Run the DNA testing on that.
I'm telling you. There's something stinky about this one.
Said the mayor. What did the mayor have to say about this? He told the Whittier Daily News, "I made a mistake of putting it in his walkway. Rather than leaving it, I should have walked on by or disposed of it properly." He has also formally apologized to Lau with a letter. However, Lau says he thinks he can just smooth things over. He thinks that he can just have the police drop it, but I will pursue it. I'm in touch with a lawyer, and we're thinking of pursuing harassment. Lau has protested against the nearby dog park in the past and also has no poop zone signs in his front lawn. According to Lau, Neer does not care for his son.
You know, most politicians have an abundance of some things. That's one of them.
Indeed they do. Was the evidence preserved, I wonder?
If it's still in the bag, you know. Have the crime scene unit come out there.
All right,
we got one more for you here.
All right.
And I have to say, as we're going to my home state of Indiana, I have to shake my head at this. An Indiana man led police on a farm tractor chase across state lines, was arrested and hit with a felony for fleeting and eluding charges. Get this. He's on a tractor.
I was going to say, a farm tractor.
A low-speed chase that began in Adams County, Indiana, and ended in Mercer County, Ohio, after about 2 hours when Dustin Close's tractor broke down, and then police had to use a taser on him after he failed to shut off or exit the vehicle. According to the release, the 20-year-old attempted to hit a deputy and also rammed several patrol cars driving at 18 miles an hour.
Was this like one of those big, I mean, what I'm envisioning is like, you know, on Green Acres, you know, where he's sitting atop the little tractor. But of course, some of these things can be big old combines.
A combine with 100 feet wide. Yeah, with the
not only that,
attached.
But you know, most of the small towns in Indiana are 2-lane roads. Where if you get into these tractors, which are almost like half a million dollar machines.
Sure.
They take up the whole road.
Yeah, they're big.
And, so the chase started with Indiana police.
Were people lining up along the sides of the road, you know, a la O.J. Simpson?
Here you go!
John Deere all the way, baby.
I just want to know, could they not get in front of the vehicle, you know, like do the stop sticks or anything?
Would you get in front of one of the big old things that's coming at you?
Talk about Bigfoot running over your vehicles.
Now, of course, that sheriff's going to go out and petition his commission to get them a tank or something next time this happens.
Said Mercer County Sheriff Jeff Gray, "This was an unusual pursuit. We're happy no one from the public, Mr. Klaus, or law enforcement was injured. Law enforcement agencies from both states worked well to bring this to a safe conclusion."
All right.
18-mile-an-hour chase.
Good enough. Well, I got a couple of little ones for you here.
All right.
This is kind of a WTF news story. It has to do with Don Sterling.
Oh, goodness.
And he's kind of gone back and forth. He, you know, he went to church and got a little bit of God and decided to drop his lawsuit against the NBA.
Till he didn't.
Until he evidently went to talk to his tax attorney.
All right,
let me tell you what's behind him refiling this lawsuit. His tax attorney evidently told him that, listen, Don, if you go ahead and sell the team voluntarily, you will be subject to the capital gains tax, all right, which, of course, includes now, because of Obamacare, an additional tax. And so you were talking about a 40% tax before the state tax kicks in, which is another about 13%. So you would be talking about over 50% of that $2 billion going to the governments of California and the United States. Now, that's the bad news, Don. Here's the good news. If you refile your suit, and just don't matter if you win or lose, You can, let's say if you win the suit, you don't have to sell the team. But if you lose the suit and you're still forced to sell the team, you may not have to pay those taxes. Because under the tax law, if you are forced into selling, the capital gain does not apply. So he should have seen his tax attorney before he went to the church, and he might have saved us all the trouble. But it's a pretty astute actual tax strategy for a guy who has dementia.
That tax guy's getting a good bonus this Christmas.
Yeah. No kidding.
I tell you what, if I was old Donnie Boy, I'd be paying him at least as much as he paid Victor, or V, or whatever her name was, his name.
Victor Victoria. There you go. It's the American Adversaries. We're 1 hour done with our Sunday Night Classic show, but 2 hours left to go. We're going to be up on 660 any minute now, so stay tuned.
Celebrating 50 years as Apopka's hometown station. 1520 WBZW, Apopka's hometown station. A division of Sam.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you are listening to the American Adversaries 3 hour Sunday evening tour, entering on into our second hour of said 3 hour tour. You are listening to Christopher Hart and Nostradamus and Johnny Guns. And Jeff Sinis, of course, is on the bridge tonight, so we are in good shape. The Tampa Bay Rays just closed out a victory against the Houston Astros. Finally won a series.
Oh, first road series they've won in a month.
A long time, yeah. 4-3 is the final score of the Rays game. They're going to do a post-game show, and as soon as that's over, we'll be going up on AM 660, The Answer. And for you folks who are listening to us right now on 1520 WBZW, first of all, we appreciate that. And second of all, we'll let you know as soon as we do go back up so that you can go back down the dial. Should you choose to do so, and I would imagine you would since that's where the signal is much stronger. All right. Speaking of strong signals, our president has been sending strong signals for a long time to the rest of the world. Unfortunately, they are the wrong signals, the strong wrong signals, or wrong strong signals to the rest of the world. We're going to talk about that a little bit here in the next hour, where we're going to talk about Iraq, Bo, and Boko.
Those are 3-4-letter words you got written down on our line here.
That's interesting, because as a part of our Who Said That contest tonight, there is also a 4-letter word. I have to substitute a different word for. So,
wow!
But it'll be the first time we've ever had to do that. But it's a quote, and we're going to use it because I think it's quite apropos. And I'll tell you why when we get to that. And that'll be, of course, in the bottom of the hour. Before we get to that, though, I do want to talk about Iraq and the deal for Bo Bergdahl and what we gave up to get Bo Bergdahl released, or at least what we have been told that we gave up, which may not be entirely the truth. And then we're going to talk about Boko Haram and a fellow by the name of Abu al-Baghdadi. Iraq is deteriorating, and many of the news medias are going around, and of course the White House has intimated this, that this is all a big surprise, didn't see this coming. This proves that the Iraqi army wasn't up to the task, because all they did when they were confronted is they dropped their weapons in their drawers and they took off. They would have us believe that this is somehow was not predictable, or not being for a little foresight and thought and planning might not have prevented a lot of this. Of course, that is a big lie. So I want to take you through a little bit of it tonight. I was doing a little cleaning yesterday as I was doing some laundry, and I was getting rid of some old newspapers, and I stumbled across this, and I thought, God must have made this fall into my hands at this time for this very reason. It's dated Friday, December 23rd, 2011. It's a copy of the Wall Street Journal.
What are you keeping papers that old in your place?
I knew you were going to say that.
Wow.
This was in a bundle that I had thrown newspapers in because I thought that they were stories that I could use. And it had gotten buried under some other stuff. And I know you're thinking I'm a hoarder, but I'm not.
No.
Every now and then I clean out the place, and then I hoard stuff until I clean it out again.
No, if you can get the cameras into every room, they don't film you. You have to be able to squeeze into a room.
But nonetheless, I thought it was divine intervention. Friday, December 23rd, 2011. Okay? This is 5 days after the final troops withdrew from Iraq. All right. Thank you, Barack Obama. Let me just read the first couple of paragraphs here. It's a front page article, and it got photographs and everything, which I can't show you because Lucas isn't here tonight. But violence jolts Iraq. Day of bombings kills dozens. Stokes sectarian divisions. Now, does that sound like something far off and remote? That has been happening ever since we pulled out of Iraq. Let me read the first couple paragraphs. Dateline Baghdad. A barrage of at least 15 bombings left dozens dead across the Iraqi capital Thursday in a violent escalation of a conflict that threatens to rip apart the country's delicate political fabric just days after the departure of U.S. troops. How is what's going on being characterized right now? Threatening to rip apart the delicate fabric.
Yep.
So, this is nothing new. This has been going on for 3 years. Almost 3 years. 2.5 years. I'll read on. How Iraqis resolve the dramatic resurgence of their deep sectarian and ethnic divisions could determine whether the nation holds together in the form the U.S. tried to steward over the past 9 years. I mean, you could almost take this whole article, reprint it today,
and
it would be exactly.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But so anybody that didn't think that this wasn't coming wasn't paying attention, and that of course would include the President of the United States. Let me just read a little bit more. At the center of the conflict is Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. Who's at the center of it today? Whose Shiite-dominated government has quickly become enmeshed in battles with Sunni provinces and officials, including seeking the arrest of the vice president, even as the Iraq's third major interest group, the Kurd, tries to assert more autonomy. All of the same characters, all of the same plot line, everything going on. And basically, it started the day that we left. And why? Because we were providing the stability that didn't allow these things to happen. We were providing the leadership that they needed to proceed and the intelligence to go after the bad guys.
It's a good thing we won't make that mistake again, will we?
Oh, no, we're not going to make that mistake again. Now, let me jump forward to Wednesday, and this is in the front page of the New York Times. And it's a title, Sunni Militants Drive Iraqi Army from Big City. Now, once again, we're all being told by the White House and others that this was a big surprise, that didn't see this coming. And as a matter of fact, they're now blaming the intelligence community for not seeing this coming. Well, we had pulled the intelligence community out of Iraq in 2011, you boobs! The only intelligence community that we had left is basically stationed at the embassy compound in Baghdad behind huge concrete walls. How are they going to collect intelligence that way? This is why we needed a residual military force there, so that we could actually go out and get usable intelligence. Let me just read the first couple of paragraphs of this article, entitled, subtitled, Exhausted and Bereft, Iraqi Soldiers Quit Fight. And that foretells the story. Exhausted and bereft. Now, do you get exhausted by one surprise attack? Let me read the article once again. Dateline Baghdad. The infantryman and his colleagues were already worn down after 6 months of fighting militants in western Iraq. Men flush with weapons and zeal. In other words, that's who they were fighting. Army commandos had no answer for the daily deadly ambushes and no broader strategy for prevailing in the longer war. The final straw was the death of a friend killed 2 weeks ago by a sniper's bullet. The infantryman didn't want to be, Bashar al-Halbusi deserted, making the same choice as hundreds of other soldiers in his battalion. The state is weak, he said. This will be an endless battle. The military in Iraq has been fighting, and pretty doggone gallantly, against an enemy who is relentless and who is now better armed and has better morale than they do. And by the way, when these militants, ISIS, which is the group is called Independent State of Iraq and Syria, is basically what it stands for. ISIS, when they took over these cities and they took over these military compounds, not only are they raiding the banks and getting millions upon millions of dollars, but they're also walking away and driving away with Humvees and tanks, American-built M1, A1, top-of-the-line tanks.
Arms and ammunition that were just too heavy and just not worth taking back when we pulled out. It was not worth the time and effort it would have taken to get them out of there.
And we wanted to stand up the Iraqi army with the best chance of succeeding. And, of course, we had destroyed most, if not all, of their top-of-the-line military equipment. And so we left them stuff to do. Unfortunately, we didn't leave the people that could make sure that that didn't fall into the wrong hands. But our president, why, he was so smart. He knew what he was doing. Right? Yeah, he may have known what he was doing, but it was a very stupid thing to do. And remember that word, stupid, folks, okay?
You know, what I want to know is at what point is the U.S.
That's a hint, by the way.
Yeah. At what point is the United States intelligence community, both current and retired members of it, going to get fed up over being thrown under the bus over and over and over? At some point, you know they have intelligence on every citizen in the country, including our own president.
Well, but they are...
I know they're bound by the code. Fine. But
I was going to say they are bound by things that this president should be bound by. And that is, first and foremost,
honor,
honor and a pledge to protect and defend the Constitution of the United States of America.
Which is why I'm surprised that no one yet has come out and come out with some kind of dirt on what's going on inside the White House.
There will be revelations, but unfortunately, it'll be after this guy's, you know, has gone out of town.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say he'd been run out of town.
Mentally and physically.
But, yeah, has gone out of town, which is where he is now. I mean, with all of this going on, you know, he's got his team working around the clock on it. But now he's out in California working around the clock raising money.
I think he's on the 12th hole right now.
Yeah, something like that.
He already
did
the fundraiser out in Laguna Beach.
All right, well, we've got a whole lot more to talk about. We're just really getting going here. We'll go ahead and take the break. When we come back, of course, you can join in as well. 407-774-8255 is the number. When we come back, we'll continue this conversation, and we're going to expand it beyond Iraq because all of this really does flow sort of into the same river of trouble. And it definitely is a firestorm. If not entirely the creation of this president, much of it is the responsibility of this president because of his lack, his inaction, and his inability to lead.
Hey, who's that rolling down the river? It is the American Adversaries on our Sunday night 3-hour tour. Stick around to the other side. We'll be back and we'll get our oars back out. Right. It is the American Adversaries. We are live. It is Sunday night. Nostradamus in studio with Johnny Guns, Christopher Hart, Jeff Sennis behind the glass, and we got a caller on with comments. Chris, you want to take it?
Well, sure. Hey, Steve, thank you for calling. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are y'all doing? Happy Father's Day to everybody.
And same to you.
And to you.
Okay. Now, I just want to say this whole business with ISIS and everything in Iraq.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, one of the thing I don't think most people are realizing, the big winner in this is going to be Iran.
I was going there next, but go ahead and finish your thought. But that's exactly where I'm going next. Yep.
They've already sent in Revolutionary Guard. They have a very large Shia population that's saying, hey, I'll fight. They're butchering my families and my like that. So, you know, the Ayatollahs in Iran are going to say, hey, we were here to help you. Where was the U.S.? They left you and we're here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's going to, I mean, this is a lose-lose proposition for us. If ISIS takes over, it's Syria and Iraq. If Iran merges with Iraq, I mean, dear God, there is no good news with this.
No,
the Obama.
No, all of this is very, very dangerous. All of these are very, very dangerous developments. There's no question about that. Yeah, in the prior segment, my whole point of reading the articles was that if the president and his team didn't know what was going on, they were not paying attention. Now, the theme of this segment is the Iranians were. The Iranians have been paying attention. They have been meddling in Iraqi politics ever since the day. Well, actually, even before we left. And matter of fact, one of my criticisms of George W. Bush and the way we handled the war is, first of all, we should have had much better security of Iraqi borders, both sides, going in and out of Syria and going in and out of Iran. Because going in and out of Syria were insurgents. Going in and out of Iran was military training and technology and weapons and IEDs. I mean, these were acts of war. We could have literally invaded Syria and Iran, and according to international law, would have been in every bit of our right to do so, because they were interfering in a war that we were participating in against us.
Estimates are that nearly half of the IEDs that have killed or wounded American soldiers in Iraq were manufactured in Iran.
And I know Dick Cheney would have been all for taking the war to the Iranians. We should have. If they were going to continue to do that, they should have been warned. You do not do this. But we didn't. And we have allowed them ever since. And, of course, when we walked away from Iraq, basically what Barack Obama did is he kind of like Pilate. He washed his hands of the affair. You see, it's no longer my responsibility. I've washed my hands of it. And then he's turned his back and he's walked away. And now he's finding himself. He would just as soon, I'm sure, not do anything. But
well,
he's finding
exactly
himself.
What he's doing.
I'm sorry.
So,
exactly.
That's exactly what he's doing.
Exactly. Exactly. And
instead of playing his fiddle while Rome burns, he's playing golf right. While the Mideast burns.
Exactly. And he's putting off doing anything as long as possible, which is the way he has done foreign policy decisions from the very get-go, because he's afraid to make a decision of his own, or at least he's afraid to be put in a position where he'll have to actually own the decision outright. And so he's playing this weight game. And he's the only reason he's going to, if he does anything, the only reason will only be because he's under political pressure to do so, not because he thinks it's a good idea. That in his mind just doesn't, you know, calculate. So you're absolutely right. The Iranians have jumped all over this, and I can see the Barack Obama administration trying to twist this around, just like they're trying to twist the release of these five detainees as an attempt to make nice with the Taliban so that they'll negotiate some sort of agreement with us as we leave Afghanistan. Like there's any reality of that happening whatsoever. I can
well,
see...
Well,
let me just finish this point, and I'll let you make yours. I can see where this administration will, over the coming days, be saying, well, you know, maybe this is a good thing. Maybe this will give us a chance, you know, to get closer to Iran. You know, we're trying to work out this nuclear deal. Maybe this is a good thing. Maybe this will be a chance for detente with Iran. You know, they're basically backed into a corner where every option is a losing option. So now what they have to do is try to make us all think that it's a pretty picture that they've painted themselves into this corner of. Steve?
Okay. Well, point one, with Obama's narcissism, I mean, I'm sure he's convinced that everything is working out perfectly to
right.
his plan.
Exactly.
Two, what we've seen how well our enemies respond to compassion.
My
idea of negotiating with Iran is sending them a glass paperweight made from the irradiated, you know, sands from the salt flats when we were doing nuclear testing, saying this is what waits for you.
Yeah,
no.
It would be a much more clear message for them, and I guarantee you it would be far more productive in diminishing their nuclear ambitions. than the quote-unquote compassion or the understanding or the deliberative nature of this president. All of those things they simply see as weaknesses, which are there to be exploited, and exploited they are. And so great call there, Steve, but you're absolutely right about those things.
Thank you much, John. Going to keep listening.
All right, thank you. We appreciate you being out there. We very much do that.
Good day.
Okay, you too. And, of course, folks, you can call us, too, if you'd like. 407-774-8255 is the number. And in the next segment, we're going to do our Who Said That contest, which I think is going to fit right into all of this, what we're talking about here.
But no four-letter word. You got to blot that out.
Yeah. Got the dump button ready, Jeff?
Dump is also a four-letter word.
Yeah, that's right. But the Iranians, they have been... The Iranians are involved in a lot of things in the Middle East, and we've known this for some time, and this administration has chosen to turn its blind eye to it. For all we know, they're already working in cahoots with the Iranians. We do know that, for instance, that there were, for years, secret negotiations going on between this administration and the Iranians to set up the quote-unquote nuclear talks that are going on now. We also know that Valerie Jarrett, probably the closest confidant of the president and the first lady, was born in Iran. Her father was a businessman in Iran. She's not Iranian, but she was born there. And that her foreign policy expertise outside of being born in Iran comes from the fact that she was basically a real estate broker.
Not much to say there, is there?
I guess not. But I do look for in the coming days. This is sort of a prediction of this administration trying to spin this that, you know, the Iranians get involved is not necessarily a bad thing. So, oh yes, it is.
I got a question.
A terrible thing.
What you were mentioning, the possibility of Iran and Iraq actually teaming up. What would they call it? Irank?
That would get my vote.
It'd be a five-letter word. So
yeah, but it's the problem is, of course, that our enemies are being emboldened by all of this. Our allies are being frightened, rightfully so, by all of this, and that is a volatile mixture, and it is a firestorm that is rapidly getting out of control and could easily consume the Middle East in a civil war across all of the nations.
And the worst part about it is the enemies of our enemies, in this case, are still our enemies.
That's right. But, you know, the president said the war's over. So I guess really we're just, you know.
Oh, happy Christmas.
Being fear
mongers.
War
is over. John and Yoko, way to go.
Yeah, right. All right, when we come back, our Who Said That contest.
The American Adversary is now exactly halfway done. Well, wait, halfway done in 10. 9. I'm not going to count
T-minus.
It down. You know where to go. We are the American Adversaries. And Sunday night, we are live.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will say this. I'm glad that Lucas is not in the studio tonight. This is not up on Ustream because Dennis is flashing me right now. You are listening.
Flash card, yeah.
You are listening to the American Adversaries. Nostra Dennis. Lair Adams is not here because I'm looking at Christopher Hart. Jeff is here. I'm Johnny Guns. And it's time for that Who Said That contest, which I'm very interested in because we have to kind of edit ourselves tonight. So
gonna have to do the proceed with caution here. All right, folks, you know how to play this, or in case you don't, I'll just tell you real quickly. We simply read a quote, and you simply call us up at 407-774-8255, and if you are accurate in telling us who said it, you will win the prizes, which, of course, exists of a $20 Cafe Positano gift card, which, of course, is the finest Italian restaurant, I believe, in all of Central Florida. It is about 4 miles west of I-4 on State Road 436, and $20 for the gift card, and you will also win a My Liberty Threads t-shirt. These are American-made and America-proud, and they're really cool t-shirts, and the best part is, of course, they are American-made.
And even if you don't get it right, If no one gets it right, you get a prize for being the first one to try.
That's right.
That's right. So here we go. All right. If you know who said this, give us a call, 407-774-8255. Who said, and I quote, "Don't do stupid stuff."
I was trying to censor you there.
Don't do stupid stuff. And the reason that he's doing that is because we are substituting the word stuff for another S word of four letters. So don't do stupid stuff. I played around with a little... What do they call that? Pig Latin, you know?
The Pig Latin FCC would be on your back.
All right, so who said, "Don't do stupid stuff"? And I'll give you a hint that this is a president, and he said this in regards to what is his foreign policy.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Good to have a foreign policy like that.
Yeah.
Don't do stupid.
So which president said don't do stupid stuff?
Can we get multiple choice on this? Yes, it's one of 44 people.
Yeah, one of 44. Mm. Well, actually not 44
it's one
people.
One of 43 people.
There you go. All right, so... if you want to take a stab at it, give us a call, 407-774-8255. And it's only four words, one of them four letters. There it is. Don't do stupid stuff. If you know who said that, give us a call and try to win the prizes. I want to move on now because as part of what's happening in the Middle East, you cannot discount what we just did with this prisoner release. And it, in fact, was a prisoner release. It was not a prisoner, quote-unquote, exchange for Bo Bergdahl. I'm becoming more and more convinced that a ransom was paid for Bo Bergdahl's release. It may have been paid, quote-unquote, by the Qataris, and I'm sure that there were some deal to reimburse them somehow by the United States. And by the way, who's paying for their accommodations while they are in Qatar? Right, these guys just got out of prison, basically. I mean, what's their income? How can they stay in these big, nice compounds that they're staying at in Qatar? Somebody's paying for all of this. And I guarantee you that there was money paid because the Haqqani Network, who actually held Bo Bergdahl, is not the Taliban proper. They are more like a mob organization that exists within the Taliban structure. So they are more interested in money and drugs and things of that nature than they are in ideological, you know, movements.
So it wouldn't matter to them what they were getting back for his exchange as long as it was money. There's nothing political really involved.
Exactly. Yeah. It wouldn't have mattered to them as long as it was money.
Yeah.
And so I believe a ransom was paid for Bo Bergdahl's release. And then to help cover that up, they released these five terrorists. And that's exactly what they are. They are terrorists. And by the way, before they were released, the United States Intelligence Services provided an evaluation and said that they, for sure, two of them will go back to the war field, to the battlefield, and four most likely.
Well, wait. Hillary Clinton said that these five guys pose a threat to Afghanistan and Pakistan. Not to us.
And this is supposedly a woman with an understanding of statesmanship and statecraft in the world. If Afghanistan and Pakistan are threatened, by very nature, the United States of America is threatened. Think about Pakistan being threatened. What does Pakistan have, by the way?
Well, they had Osama bin Laden for one thing.
What do they have that can do a lot of damage?
The bomb.
Nuclear weapons. Oh, no, that's not a big deal. What difference does it make, right?
At this point.
Yeah, at this point. All right, well, I've got a caller on the line who thinks that they know who said, "Don't do stupid stuff."
My throat hurts now. Come on.
Okay, I'm sorry. So let's go to John from Oak Hill. John, who do you think said that?
George W. Bush.
You might think a Texan would say something like that. I would have thought, if I had picked a Texan, I'd have picked Lyndon Johnson because he threw around that kind of language pretty liberally. But no, it was not either George W. Bush or, in that case, Lyndon Baines Johnson. Mm. So I just gave out another hint. But thank you, John, for being out there. We appreciate you calling.
And if no one gets it right, John, you will be the winner. So we hope that
stay on the
Jeff
line.
Gets your number and all that information.
Yeah. And all right. We appreciate you listening, John. But it wasn't George W. And as I said, it wasn't LBJ either. But some president did say that. And
say what?
Say that.
What was the quote again? Can we get
make
it one
him
more
say
time?
It again.
Don't do stupid. Yes, the S word.
You got any Roxy Pacifics I need to spray my throat?
So U.S. intelligence has predicted these guys will go back to the battle, and other people that we have released, we do know, have gone back to the battle. One of them is a fellow by the name of Abu al-Baghdadi, and that's a shortened version of his name. Nostradamus, I believe you have more information on him.
Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. Yes. He's not a small fish either. In October 2011, the U.S. State Department listed al-Baghdadi as a specially designated global terrorist. That's basically like being on the most wanted list. They announced a reward of $10 million for information leading to his capture or death. Only al-Zawahiri, the chief of the global al-Qaeda organization, merits a larger reward, which is currently $25 million. Supposedly, this dude holds a PhD in Islamic studies from Baghdad University, and he has challenged the very leadership of al-Qaeda, so says Al Jazeera, denouncing them publicly as deviating from the cause. And Baghdadi says he is the true heir to Osama bin Laden's legacy.
And he was once detained by the United States government, was he not?
In 2006, he was a part of the resistance in the Iraq War, but he was arrested by U.S. forces and held in Camp Buka. That's the main U.S.-run prison once the torture scandal shut down Abu Ghraib.
Right.
And he was interred as a low-level prisoner, and it is here, Al Jazeera says, that he became more deeply involved with the fighters from al-Qaeda. Ended up hooking up with them and ended up pairing up with them. The quote here says, from a Syrian ISIL fighter, ISIL, same thing.
Right.
Two different groups, same name. Sheikh Baghdadi and Sheikh Osama are similar. They always look ahead. They both seek an Islamic state. There can be no doubt ISIS's rise in recent years is due to Baghdadi's shaping it into a transnationally minded and brutal organization.
So, in other words, Abu al-Baghdadi is behind a lot of what's going on right now in Iraq. He's the big daddy of ISIS, the independent Iraq and Syria, independent state of Iraq and Syria. That's ISIS. And so this is a guy that we once had in custody. We released him. Now, he wasn't at Gitmo, but he was in U.S. custody in a prison in Iraq. And he's gone back, obviously, to the fight. And this is what's going to happen with the majority of the detainees that we release. And there will be more releases. Make no mistake about that. I think the president thought that this release was going to go so smoothly that it was going to set up an easy path for him to release the other detainees and close down Gitmo. And he's been caught off guard by the negative reaction to the whole thing. And in particular, the fact that Bo Bergdahl, had this questionable capturing, if you will. So the whole situation is very predictable. So any president who comes along and tells you that he has to wait a couple of days for his options to be developed is only telling you that he's not paying attention.
What would these five guys be expected to go back to doing? They're not going to open up a falafel stand. They're not going to go start being a silversmith somewhere. They're going to go back to doing what they know how to do.
Exactly.
Blow things up and kill people.
Yeah, that is about the size of it. All right, we're coming up on the break, and I see we have another guest for our Who Said That contest. We'll go to her after the break. If you would like to get in on it, if you think you know who said, don't do stupid. stuff. Give us a call at 407-774-8255. You are listening to The American Adversaries.
It's Sunday night, and I'm getting sick of saying, so I think we're going to have a winner pretty soon.
Maybe we got one on the line right now. We'll see. And we're back up on AM 660, The Answer. If you've been listening to the Rays post-game show, welcome to the American Adversaries. And if you've been listening to us on 1520 WBZW, you can now go down the dial to AM 660, The Answer, and listen to us there, where we have a big old booming brand-new transmitter and signal. So welcome back to the show. That's right, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries in the middle of our three-hour Sunday evening tour. I am Christopher Hart, along with Nostradamus.
Hiya.
And Johnny Guns.
Hello there.
We're coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. And don't forget, for the best in Mercury Free dentistry, call Dr. James E. Hardy at 407-678-3399. And for the past, this hour of the show, we've been talking about Iraq and the prisoner release. And I'm going to refuse from now on to call it a prisoner exchange, because I'm convinced that the reason Bo Bergdahl was released by the Haqqani terrorist network is because a ransom was paid. And by the way, and Nostradamus has this story, there's evidently been a kidnapping. All of a sudden, now another kidnapping. I shouldn't say another, but because it's been fairly quiet on that front in Israel. Very troubling trend may be starting now, thanks to the quote-unquote prisoner exchange. But we're going to continue that conversation, but we're in the middle of our Who Said That contest, and our quote tonight is, don't do stupid stuff. And the reason for that is that there was the four-letter S word that was used in place of stuff. So who said don't do stupid stuff? And the prize tonight is a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano, the finest Italian restaurant in all of Central Florida, and a My Liberty Threads American Made, American Proud t-shirt, thanks to Scott Miller of MyLibertyThreads.com. And so we had our first guest from John in Oak Hill. He thought it was George W. Bush, and I went ahead and volunteered that it was not George W. Bush, nor was it the other Texan president, LBJ, who was a much bigger cusser than George W. But let's go now to Diane from Apopka, who thinks she knows who said don't do stupid stuff. Diane?
Happy Father's Day, everybody.
Thank you.
I believe
and to you
it
and
is our low-rent president.
Who is?
Current.
Yes.
Obama.
Okay. I know it's hard to say. It was
hard to say, but easy to guess.
It was President Obama, and he thought he was being smart saying it.
Mm-hmm.
He actually evidently told it to the press corps, who was on Air Force One as he was going on his most recent Asian trip. He ventured down to the press corps, where they sit below the president. You know, it's kind of this royalty type thing. He descends down to speak to the press corps, and upon being questioned, is, you know, what is your foreign policy? Can you just, in a couple words, can you tell us? And he said, yeah, don't do stupid stuff.
It's tough to take your own advice, though, for some people.
And then he had the press corps chant it back to him.
Chant it back
and he still didn't listen.
And he still didn't get it, because he still keeps doing stupid stuff all over the place. I mean, everything he does is stupid. But really what he was trying to convey, I believe, in a maybe not so subtle way, and tell me if you think I'm wrong here, Diane, but I think he was trying to convey is that I'm a deliberative person. I look in depth at the problem, and I consider all the options before I venture in and make a decision, because I'm going to make sure I don't make a mistake.
Uh-huh.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong? Uh-huh. Or is that Barack Obama all day long?
That's Barack Obama. And my father always said, words matter, and they show your IQ when you don't use them right.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. The only problem for this strategy of being deliberative and taking your time about making decisions is history doesn't wait on you. History is rolling on every day. And ISIS is moving. I mean, they're not waiting on Barack Obama to consider his options. As a matter of fact, they're counting on him taking his time about it.
Sure.
And so in his attempt to sound smart, he ends up sounding, excuse me for saying, but very stupid. So, hey, thank you, Diane, for calling, and we'll get that stuff out to you and appreciate it. And once again, thank you for happy Father's Day wishes, and the same go to Jim.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, you know, that made me think of another quote by Mark Twain.
Yeah.
Better to keep your mouth closed and let people think you were a fool than to open it and remove all doubt.
Remove all doubt. Yeah, yep. That's right. All right. Before I go on, let's go to Tim, our friend Tim, who wants to make a comment. Tim, thank you for calling.
Happy Father's Day to everybody.
Thank you, Tim, and to you.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
You bet. So, listen, I thought it was actually... was Obama, but I thought he had heard that because Michelle tells him that all the time. and he thought, well, she's saying it. It's got to be cool. So, you know,
it does sound about right. I must say that, Tim, that does have the ring of truth all over it, my friend.
Yeah. Well, you know, Tim, according to the supermarket tabloids, Michelle told Obama, whose side are you on? I don't know what the issue was, but apparently even she gets flummoxed by his decision sometimes.
Yeah. That relationship, I don't know who to feel sorry for more, him or her.
Right. Well, they deserve each other. Though.
Indeed. Very well put. Very well put. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Tim.
All right.
Hey, it looks like Wednesday night at Cafe Positano this week.
Okay. I'll keep my eyes open.
All right. We appreciate you being out there.
You bet.
Very astute point that Tim's made there. Abu al-Baghdadi is a troublemaker. We had him in custody. We should have dealt with him at that time. He should still be in an Iraqi prison somewhere. And if perhaps we had gotten a SOFA agreement, a security forces agreement, and had a residual force in Iraq, perhaps we could have headed off. I guarantee you we could have headed off a lot of this stuff. And by the way, don't we still have residual forces in Germany and Japan?
And South Korea.
I mean...
Since the end of the Korean conflict.
And where are these morons that come along and tell us that we don't know how to build nations? We have built fantastic nations in Germany and Japan and South Korea.
We've helped rebuild them, yeah.
Doggone right
after major
we did.
Wars,
built them from scratch. From scratch.
We're not going to be rebuilding Iraq, though, if it falls again. That's not going to happen.
Well, unfortunately, if Iraq falls, what we are seeing happening in front of us is, as I said, that part of the world in particular is descending into a firestorm. And it is just going to get worse, and it's going to spread until it is taken seriously. And unfortunately, all I can foresee is down the road, it is going to be a major armed conflict.
And we've sunk a decade... trillions of dollars and several thousand U.S. lives into that sinkhole.
You know, the fact that you mentioned that about American lives, that's very interesting, too, because as I've been watching this play out over the past week, we are being reminded, as we should be, of what we did spend there, because we have now squandered it because we did not stay and finish the job, which the military was more and the people in it were more than willing to do. But I have seen the quote-unquote... fact of the men and women that were killed there, that what I now call estimates, as low as 4,424 and as high as 4,900. I mean, can't we come to at least an agreement on how many men and women that we lost in Iraq? I mean, what's the different criteria? How come there's no agreement? But my point is this: Iraq was very pacified, going out of 2008 into 2009. And when Barack Obama became president, the country was well on its way to being in far better shape than it had ever been under Saddam Hussein, and, of course, far better shape than it is in today. And one of the reasons why is because we were there to put pressure on Maliki and to help see the intelligence be developed accurately and fully so that these organizations could have been stopped in their tracks. Now it is going to be far more difficult, and the president has now limited his options as what he can do, and basically he has no good options.
Iraq is kind of like the multi-million-dollar mansion that you spend years and lots of money to build. And then you leave without putting a fence around the mansion, locks on the doors, and glass in the windows.
Yep.
And what's going to happen? The next door neighbor is going to say, hey, that's a pretty nice looking house.
I want that.
I tell you what. If any of you are out there thinking, well, it's not going to bother us, let the whole place over there go to hell. Oh, yes, it will affect us. It will affect us dramatically. By the way, have you noticed the price of oil the last week? The price of oil went up about 5%.
Most of it is speculation.
The price of natural gas went up about 5%. Exactly. And just think if there are real cuts to supplies. Iraq, by the way, is now producing more oil than it ever did under Saddam Hussein on a daily level. They are now a full participant in the world oil market. And if you pull their 3 or 4 million barrels a day off the world market, it will be felt in your gas tank.
Everybody's, yep.
And, of course, that works just fine for Barack Obama, too, because he wants you driving an electric car, which, of course, that they're going to have to build a lot more wind farms. As a matter of fact, that they would have to, in order to supply the United States with electricity, they would have to cover 100,000 square miles with wind farms every year.
An additional, right.
Exactly.
That's the size of Germany.
That's right. All right, folks, so we got big problems in that. And then Boko Haram, they have kidnapped another 20 girls in Nigeria. And, of course, we have these kidnappings in Israel. I wonder, is Michelle out there tweeting? Is she holding up little signs, you know, about these people?
Bring back our girls.
She might have run out of tweets and sad looks from the Oval Office. It's the American Adversaries.
Well, we haven't run out of ammunition around here.
No, it's a Sunday night, and we are here, and we are live, and you are there, so keep it tuned.
Celebrating 50 years as Apopka's hometown station. 1520 WBZW, Apopka's hometown station. A division of Salem.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They team with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American Adversaries.
Welcome back to the American Adversaries, ladies and gentlemen. 7 o'clock in the City Beautiful, which means it's 4 o'clock out on the left coast, where Jeff is going to hit that music, and we are going to talk to Sunny, our California girl.
Hey, Sunny, how you doing tonight?
Hi, guys. How are y'all doing? Happy Father's Day to everyone out there.
Thank you, Sonny.
Well, thank you very much. Hey, I understand it's a pretty big weekend for you and your family this weekend and one of your daughters.
Yes, it's her birthday. She's turning 23.
Oh, my goodness.
All right. Wow.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday, Shana.
Yeah, now that means I'm getting older, you guys. Oh, boy.
But getting better with age, right?
Yeah, I'm 50. What are you talking about?
Hey, is Shana there with you?
Yeah, they're all here in the background. I have my other daughter here, too, and my grandson. So we're having her birthday over here and Father's Day as well.
Well, I tell you what, if they're right there, ask Shana if she'll come on the air with us for a second here.
Okay, let me do that. Hold on. Let me go out here if you don't mind that.
Yeah.
Good night, Shana.
That'll be fine.
I want you on the air.
Here. Oh, Mom, do I have to?
Yeah.
Is this you, Shana?
Hi.
Well, hello, Jeff. Could you turn that music down
hello.
For a second? Because we want to sing happy birthday to Shana.
Aww,
you ready,
you
guys?
So
happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Shana. Happy birthday to you.
And many more.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much. You guys have an amazing voice. It's really good.
That's one way to put it. Yeah, amazingly bad.
Thank you so much. I'll hand you the phone back.
Okay. Happy birthday.
Who were those crazy people?
Yeah, no kidding.
All right. Thank you.
Well, I hope we thoroughly embarrassed her for you anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
There we go. All okay, right. Now I'm going to move out of here on this lovely backyard with the pool. It's about 82 degrees here in the valley. Beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah, and of course, ladies and gentlemen, Sunny is coming to us live from Los Angeles, California, as she does every Sunday night at this time. And Sunny, we got a lot to talk about tonight, too. First of all, we dropped Sunny. All right. Well, we'll get her right back on the line then. And as soon as we do, we'll go back to her to talk about, the president, of course, has been in California this weekend. She's got us an update on that. She also has an update on... Well, let's see here. What did we have?
Casey Kasem? Can we talk about him?
Oh, yeah, Casey Kasem.
Yeah.
He died in Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's right.
And, I think it was ironic. He died on Father's Day. And because he was basically the father of music radio from the 60s on up.
Yep.
And he died on Sunday. And his America's Top 40 show was what I listened to every Sunday morning for years and years and years, 4 hours of listening, before my mom drugged me off to church and then let me listen to the tail end of it. But he was an institution on Sundays.
Yep. And, of course, the countdowns every week, the top 40 countdowns, it was always a lot of fun. Matter of fact, I was listening to, was it 105 or one of those FM stations?
105.9 still plays repeats.
And just a couple of weeks ago, and was marveling at him. And then the news broke that he had been in, was suffering from dementia. And evidently there was a custody battle going on between one of his daughters and the...
His wife, Jean.
Mm-hmm. His wife. Right. Of some 30-some-odd years, and a judge had intervened, and the last I'd heard, the judge had ordered that all nourishment and water had been ordered withheld. Yeah. Sonny, we're talking about Casey Kasem. I'm sorry we dropped you there, but...
I know these dang phones. I got to tell you.
Yeah.
You know,
Casey Kasem, evidently he passed away this morning in Los Angeles.
Yes, he did, at the age of 82. And we are certainly going to miss Shaggy as we know him. Many, many years here on our broadcasting, and it's very sad. What a tragedy. But, he was battling a long illness for so many years. And he now he's out of pain, out of misery. And I'm thankful that his daughter's actually, got a chance to get him back from that whole battle and that mess that he was just put through recently.
Yeah, it was some custody battle that was taking place. The fellas had mentioned before the show that he was Shaggy on Scooby-Doo. I didn't know that he was Shaggy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he was the voice, and I think he was also known on the radio as Shaggy, too. They would call him Shaggy as well.
Yeah, I just knew him, of course, from his radio days doing the 40 countdown. He was very famous for that, and he'd been in radio a long time.
He's the reason thousands of people on the radio today, including me, wanted to be on the radio.
Yeah.
Yes, amen to that, guys. Absolutely. Me too.
Yeah.
Him and Rick Dees, let's not forget.
Yeah.
I believe it was he and Wolfman Jack were a couple of the first nationally syndicated radio shows, weren't they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true.
Yes.
I mean, in the modern era. Yeah, so...
Yes. Well, Wolfman had a very distinguished growl and voice, didn't he? And I was blessed to meet him, too, and I actually dated his son. There's some info for you guys.
Wow. Was it Wolfman Jack Jr.?
His daughter was my best friend.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, Joy Jack. She's a beautiful, beautiful girl. And, of course, I've lost contact with him through the years after Wolfman died. And great family. And he was just truly larger than life. And what a voice. He will be missed, too. And RIP to all our finest disc jockeys out there and broadcasters and newscasters and everything. And the great fathers today of the world again, I might add. Happy Father's Day again.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking of fathers, one father, the father of two daughters, is in California this weekend. Of course, I'm talking about the President of the United States. Is he still in California? Has he headed back to Washington, D.C.? What was he up to while he was there?
Mr. Obama, yes. He landed. He went into Palm Springs. Well, he had a few, I guess,
drinks?
Dinners, if you will. a few fundraisers, one in Laguna Beach, by the way, which is getting closer to my neck of the woods, you know, still about an hour away. But he also gave a graduation speech at Angel Stadium in Anaheim.
For UCI. Then, go Anteaters.
Yep.
And then, there you go. And then he managed to fit in a good old game of golf. How about that? But, you know, he was talking about the mess in Iraq, of course.
Yeah.
As we know, that's one heck of a mess. And I believe he's flying out today. Yeah. He landed Friday and he's leaving.
Yeah.
He finished his Father's Day here. So we're blessed to have him, you know, all right, Obama and Miss Obama.
I don't know if I'd call it a blessing, but the nation was blessed that you had him for that.
There you go.
Well, yep. He had a couple of fundraisers out there, and evidently, when he gave the commencement speech, he also managed to get in a few plugs for his climate change policies. Are most Californians aware that much of your electricity now does not come from California? It comes from other states because of the nature of the regulations on the power industry in California?
Yes, I do believe in it. You know what a lot of Californians, well, depends how global and how organic they want to go. A lot of them are doing the solar panel, which is saving a lot of electricity here.
Well, if I were in California, I would believe I would be doing the same thing, too, because if the state is getting its power from other states, that could mean that the power could be, you know, eliminated or dropped at some time. And so the desire to be more independent would certainly be higher on the list.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of problems. We already have no water, so we're in a water shortage, drought. Well, there you go. And then next is electricity. We're going to go back to the olden days.
Well, part of the problem with the water shortage, especially in Southern California, is that Northern California takes a lot of the water that would normally go down to Southern California and diverts it into the ocean, so that it doesn't disrupt the ecological balance that they say they require in Northern California. So, once again, you know, regulations that are meant to, let's just say, make life better for somebody ends up making life worse for others. So, let's go on.
We'll talk about Obama's regulations and his administration that some people are really a bit teed off. I am actually one of them, too, because I find it disturbing, which is, all the immigrants that
are
coming in here.
Yeah, the children.
It's horrible, though. But the administration is aiding, they're saying, Obama's administration, aiding and abetting felonies by delivering food of illegal immigrant children to relatives in the U.S. One congressman says the Obama administration is intentionally participating in a felony, alien smuggling and human trafficking. And so far, as many as 80,000 illegal immigrant children have been traveling alone through our border system. And throughout all the way till the end of 2014, it should be, that's quite a lot of children, you guys. And there's shocking photos that were leaked out of some children in Texas that are holding in a facility. It's a packed facility, overcrowded in rooms, little minors, children. That's horrible.
A number of these children, and some 40,000 since December of last year, and they estimate by the end of this year at least 90,000, a number of these kids are under the age of 10. I mean, these are not much more than toddlers, for heaven's sake. And, evidently there are some accusations the administration is aiding and abetting them by, you know, facilitating, if you will, the passage of these children into this country and then housing them instead of deporting them back to where they came from. And it is a huge problem.
The DHS has simply chosen not to enforce the U.S. border security laws.
Right.
There was a case of, as you said, 10 years old. There's a case of a 10-year-old Salvadorian girl smuggled in the U.S. that the Department of Homeland Security is essentially delivering the minors to the custody of the parent illegally living in the U.S.
Right. And other, the parents and or other family members already here in the United States. Yeah, they go ahead and they complete the deal. In other words, the smugglers get them from, say, the Honduras or somewhere down in Central America, which where most of these children are coming from anyway. The smugglers get them through Mexico by paying off the drug cartels and evidently possibly also the Mexican government. And they get them through Mexico into Texas, and then the administration takes over and gets them on the rest of the way. I wonder if they're getting paid. Well, we can't take any money, but we can certainly get them where they're going. But nonetheless, it is a huge problem. And part of the problem, or if not all of it, was created by the president. And I must say, now other states as well offering amenities to children who have been coming here illegally, either brought by their parents or, in this case, coming here illegally on their own. The word
is. They're coming in any which way, shape, or form, and these kids are just taking all sorts of risks, you know, and traveling, you know, I'm sure they're getting stuck in a few back seats of cars, underneath cars, God knows, guys, you know, hopping on 18-wheelers.
It's sad, and a business is being made out of it, and this is human trafficking. And you got to wonder how many of these children may actually end up in as sex slaves, because that certainly happens. We have a problem of it right here in Central Florida, where Hispanic girls are brought to this this area and used as sex slaves. Mm-hmm.
And it's been big here too, guys.
Yeah.
I mean, the cops have it. They've had been forewarned. They're on their movie screens, you know, doing their research on this, on the human sex trafficking and trafficking in any which way.
And this administration has been facilitating it by their policies here, once again, which are allowing the children of being brought here illegally or finding their way here illegally to have the benefits of citizenship. And, for instance, here in the state of Florida, now they can get a college education if they can come here illegally. And so the word is getting around in South and Central America, in Central America in particular, you know, now's the time. You know, send your kid to the United States, and, you know, they'll become a citizen, and then you can go, too. And it's just a real problem. It doesn't matter to me whether the president foresaw this coming or not. Certainly, though, it is an effect of his policies and acting alone without Congress developing an actual honest-to-God immigration policy.
Yes, exactly. And they do need to get that in.
Absolutely.
I think Congress needs to be because, you know, like it says, Obama's administration is aiding and abetting felonies. So that's just right there. Hey, he's right up there with our crooked senators that we've right?
Yeah.
Come on. You know, what is our society coming to?
Yeah.
And back to society, speaking of music, which I happen to love, guys, that's my number one love is music. I try to sing once in a while. I don't know if I'm good or not. I probably, you know, want to run, but... Hey, it makes me a happy day. The 411 is that rap is dead. Well, I knew that a couple years ago in 2012 as it was dying out due to a lot of these hip-hop songs that are breeding negative thoughts. You know, no words of God, and we talk about God. Thank God, luckily, now LL Cool J, a lot of these rappers are now bringing in the word and preaching positive songs. So it's not so much hardcore rap anymore, and that's where it's dying out because these guys know they've got to change, even Eminem, you know.
Yeah, Showbiz 411 is reporting that the rap industry is collapsing. Basically, they're not selling discs, they're not selling concerts. Many of the rap artists are fading away if they haven't been killed, and certainly there is a different now outlook, evidently, toward rap music by the makers of it, and that is that they need to change it, or it will go the way of
grunge from the 90s.
Exactly, yeah. A fad-type music rather than something that sticks around. So,
Right. Well, you know, it's been around. I think it started rap 20 years ago. They call it the golden age when it started.
Yeah.
And, it's part of our history, just like the Beatles, just, you know, it can go on. But a lot of that, I quite honestly wouldn't let my kids listen to.
I was going to say, you'll find in 100 years people will still be playing the Beatles. Mm-hmm. Most of this rap stuff will be...
NWA, you can't even say what NWA stands
for. In landfills, nope. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Sonny, by the way, also congratulations on your Stanley Cup champion, LA Kings.
Yeah, the Kings.
That's right.
Here for the Kings. Go, Kings, go. They did it.
They brought the Stanley Cup to California. How do you like
Second
that?
Second time in 3 years.
Yeah. I hope that thing does. I hope that thing's got rust proof on it. Hey, Sonny, great job, and thanks, and we'll talk to you Sunday next week.
Thank you, guys. You guys have a wonderful Father's Day out there.
Once again.
And have a big, nice cold beer.
Okay, we'll do just that.
Yeah.
All right.
Take care.
Night.
Night.
Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. You are listening to the American Adversaries. This will be kind of a short segment because we had a long segment in the last segment with Sonny Patricia Summerlin, our California glow girl. But we got another girl in the studio with us right now.
Who's, our Liberty girl.
And she is quite the wrestler in her own way. So I want to introduce you to Danielle Alexandre of Liberty First Network. Danielle, thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's good being here.
All right. And Liberty First is a great organization. I'll let her tell you about that here in just a second. But I also want to introduce Grant Malloy, former Seminole County Commissioner, great friend of the show, and co-founder of the Center-Right Coalition. Grant, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you, Chris. I'll let you know, I predicted the fall of rap in 1983.
You did.
I said back then, after the Rapper's Delight came out, I said, this is going to last 6 months, and then it's over.
Your timing was a little off.
Yeah, well, you had the right idea, though. But, hey, goodbye and good riddance to it. I want to get back to Danielle. And Danielle, you spoke the other day at the Center-Right Coalition, and I was very intrigued by your presentation. First of all, Liberty First, I got the notion that Liberty First Network is a political watchdog group. Is that sort of accurate?
Well, it is in a way. We're actually lobbyists. I am now the third registered lobbyist for the Liberty First Network. I was a legislative consultant before that. But the way we're affected, because we're not offering politicians anything in you know, matter of bribes or, you know, anything.
Money, right.
Or anything. You know, so we build this coalition with the grassroots and really speak for them on liberty issues as we're lobbying in Tallahassee.
And part of what you do is you grade the politicians and you also evaluate the legislation. And so I find your organization to be very effective if people want to be informed as to what's going on in Tallahassee.
And very unbiased, too, because on both sides, the left and the right, there are people who fall short of where they should be, liberty-wise.
I think both sides fall short, and I think both sides have been failing us for quite a while, and we take a very unbiased look at it, and how we're effective is by giving you the power to hold your own legislator and your own politicians accountable. So as you're holding them accountable and we're giving you the information of what's really going up there, we go up there and then say, okay, now I really want to have a conversation with you after you've heard from your constituents.
Right. So part of what they do, folks, is you can be a part of the Liberty First Network by enrolling, and then they will alert you what's going on in Tallahassee and who to contact to do something about it, and in a timely fashion so that it will make a difference.
Yeah, we try to make sure that you're calling the right person at the time, at the right time with the right message.
And it does make a difference when these guys' phone banks start to light up. Now, how can people find out more about Liberty First Network?
On our website, LibertyFirst, FIRST FL.org.
LibertyFirstFL.org. All right, when we come back, she's going to give us a little taste of some of the grades that our politicians, in particular our Republican politicians here in Florida, get, and some of the shenanigans that the bills that they have been trying to push through.
Believe me, you wouldn't want a report card like this one from your kids. We're the American Adversaries. We'll be right back. Be smart. Be healthy. Be an American Adversary. Thank you, B. Brian Blair. Nostra Dennis here with the American Adversaries and with our guest, Danielle Alexandra from Liberty First Network.
And Grant Malloy, former Seminole County Commissioner, and co-founder of Center Right Coalition, which is where Danielle spoke the other day. And Danielle, first of all, folks, if you'd like to get involved in this and find out more about them, go to libertyfirstfl.org. That's liberty, FIRSTFL.org. And you can be put on the list so that when they need folks to call and contact these legislators, you can be right there on the front lines and do that. And they will educate you what the issue's about, what the number of the bill is all, so you'll be educated. You'll know what you're talking about when you call these guys. Now, when you spoke yesterday, first of all, you rank our politicians, and you basically give them a grade. Can you first tell us a little bit about the scale and then give us a couple of examples?
Sure. Well, what we did is at the end of the legislative session, we kind of looked through the 1,880 proposed pieces of legislation.
Now, this past legislation, 1,880 new laws were proposed.
Yes, 1,880 were proposed. 255 went to the governor's desk.
And how many did he sign?
Well, he still has a couple. He has until Monday. So, so far he has signed, I believe the last look was about 165. But we see that change quite a bit. You can go on the governor's report every day. But anything that's not signed, and what people don't know, is that when it's not signed, that doesn't mean it doesn't become a law. It actually means it does become a law without the governor's signature.
Right. It's a little bit different than I believe that at the federal level. At the federal level, I believe it requires the president's signature. Otherwise, it's a desk veto or something like that. In other words, if the president doesn't sign it at the federal level, it does not become law. But I believe in what you're saying, I think that's the case. But
so the governor has to expressly veto a bill.
Exactly.
If the governor doesn't veto it, it becomes a law, whether he signs it and it becomes a law, or it becomes a law without governor's signature.
Right. Okay, so how do some of our politicians rank?
Well, what we did is we took 20 of the bills that we thought were most important to liberty. We did exclude a lot of the ones that you're going to hear in the media because we found an issue to be that it wasn't definitive a liberty issue, so we excluded those. So we took the 20 that we thought were most important. We graded all of our politicians if they voted in favor of liberty, which means they voted against a bad piece of legislation or for a good piece of legislation, they got 5 points. If they voted against liberty, they got a negative 5 points, which you don't see very often groups penalizing legislators for bad votes. But we thought penalizing them was appropriate.
So 100 would be a perfect score, and a negative 100 would be
the
Barack Obama.
Right. and then we gave a zero for anyone who abstained from voting, because they do sometimes abstain. But we looked at that as you can't get points or receive negative points. You just didn't tell us where you stood on the issue.
All right. In terms of protecting our liberty, who scored the highest and what was the score?
The highest score was Representative John Tobiah. He's actually in part of Brevard County, and he scored a 65. He is our only B.
He scored
so 65 is a B.
And it was the high score.
Is this Common Core or what?
Well, because we could allow them to go into the negative, we adjusted the scale to give them a few extra points, only because they could go into the negative. We're in school, the zero would be the lowest.
It's kind of like an 80.
Yeah, so we gave them a little room there. But yeah, the highest score was John Tobiah with a 65. And that's overall, he got the highest. He was our only B.
I presume he's a Republican?
He is a Republican.
All right, but nonetheless, that the highest score, even for a Republican, was only 65.
And there was only one.
What was the next best score?
The next best score was a 60, and that was Ray Rodriguez. He's also in the House.
Yeah.
And the highest score in the Senate, on the Senate side, would be Senator Greg Evers, and he received a 55.
What did David Simmons receive? Do you have that there?
I can look it up. He's a Republican, so...
And he was the president of the Senate this year.
Senate, okay.
Yeah.
The president of the Senate is Don Gates.
I thought he was the head of the Senate this year. David Simmons wasn't? Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I mean, I could look for him there, but I know it's Don Gates.
All right.
I know at one point he was terming out. Did he term out this past?
No, I think he's up for election.
He is. Okay. Yes, he is still in the Senate.
He was in the House of Representatives. So
he was House. Yeah. Okay.
Switch over.
He switched over to the Senate. He received a zero.
He scored a zero.
Nothing good, nothing bad.
I have to say he's right there with my senator, Wilton Simpson, who also received a zero.
I'm sure most of the scores hover right between about 20 plus and 20 minus.
They do. We kind of said a 20 is kind of middle of the road, which is an F.
Right.
We had about four legislators receive a C. We had about 10 to 15, I think, it was a D, and everyone else had an F.
And what was the absolute worst?
Oh, the absolute worst, and that's in the Senate.
Gotta have that one.
And I presume that was a Democrat.
No, actually, it was in the House.
And, see that?
It is a Democrat,
and
it was Perry Thurston. I know that. I don't know why I look at these, because I literally have them memorized. I just looked through the paper
sport. negative what?
That would be a negative 40.
Negative 40. And by the way, folks, you can see these scores for yourself at libertyfirstfl.org. That's Liberty, FIRSTFL.
You've got the whole thing. You can just open up a PDF, and it shows you every single vote on every single of these issues.
The Republicans in general in the House scored an average of 24 out of 100. The Democrats scored a 2.8 in the House out of 100. In the Senate, they did worse. In the Senate, the Republicans' average score was 7.65, and the Democrats' score was a negative 7.5.
That's like John Belushi and Animal House had better grades than that. You know that?
Oh, my God.
Can you give us an example of maybe something you scored on, one of the issues?
Right, one of the biggest.
Sure. Of course, one of the biggest issues that we scored on, and we didn't weigh any of them. A vote was a vote. But one of the things that we scored on was the $77.1 billion budget. We opposed that. It was a $6 billion increase from last year. We thought there was a lot of unnecessary spending, a lot of pork in there. So we were opposed to that. One of the bills we supported, which would have been like HB 89, which was the threatened use of violence and this would extend the stand your ground law to where if you were to threaten or shoot a warning shot at someone that you felt that you had imminent danger from, that you could also get stand your ground immunity, where previous to that you could be under the 1020 life law and could be literally put in prison for life by shooting a warning shot at someone that you felt could harm you.
And by the way, part of the reasoning behind that proposal was because of this woman who was convicted in Jacksonville of shooting around into the wall of her house because she claimed she was being abused by her husband. And Angela Corey, no less, and her prosecutorial team got her sent to prison, then got her a retrial, and now she may actually go back and get a stiffer prison sentence.
Yep.
Thank you very much. And did that didn't pass, did it?
No, that one did pass, and it was actually signed by the governor quite early. So that will be a change to stand your ground. We feel that it strengthens stand your ground. Now, a couple of people have said that it because now it says imminent danger. It didn't before. Stand your ground didn't say that you had to be in imminent danger. We looked at it and said imminent danger was always kind of
implied
in there.
Right.
You weren't going to say, well, I think you may harm me a week from now, so I can shoot you.
Certainly
today.
It was a question in the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman case.
There was always the presumption of imminent danger was always there, whether it was spelled out or not. So we found this to be a strengthening of stand your ground.
All right. Besides, and I think perhaps even more important than you evaluate or grading our politicians, which is definitely an important thing because it gives us a great feel for where they stand. And that is the work that you do on legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And you gave a couple of examples of legislation the other day that we were being told that this will be great. For instance, it had to do with Common Core.
Yeah.
Can you relate to our audience?
Sure. We just finished our legislative analysis on Common Core for the past legislative session. There was three bills that had to do with Common Core in particular. And a lot of these bills are going to be used on the campaign trail. So we wanted to make sure
By Republicans,
okay. Of course.
Yep.
And so we wanted to make sure that the grassroots had the correct information on what they actually did. One of those would have been HB 7031, which on the surface looks like they got rid of Common Core. But what they did was just get rid of the term, the actual two words, Common Core.
Wow, right. That sounds like a tactic they use on, I don't know, Acorn?
Right.
Yeah.
Move forward?
What's that old Shakespeare saying, though? A rose by any other name is a rose.
Still has a lot of fertilizer
is
around
a rose,
it.
Yeah. None the same, exactly.
So they when they spell
but
out
now,
the standards.
Hold on a second, because this is Republicans doing this, folks. This wasn't the Democrats. Republicans came up with the idea to placate us tin hat wearing people out here who are against Common Core. So, yeah, we did away with Common Core. We're just going to call it something different
now. Democrats came up with the idea, and Republicans borrowed. Don't worry.
All right.
Don't get it back.
Nonetheless, Liberty First caught him at it. Go ahead.
Yes, and what we did is we looked through the entire piece of legislation and said, okay, well, what did this actually eliminate? And while it does eliminate the words Common Core, and now it moves it to what they're going to say is the next generation Sunshine State standards. So you're going to hear your politicians say they're our standards.
Right.
But when you look at the standards spelled out, they're absolutely compliant with Common Core.
Right.
And, you know, and the testing consortium that we got out of, PARC, which was a horrible, you know, consortium, and I'm glad that we got out of it. But what we did is replace it with AIR, the American Institutes for Research, which is a left-leaning think tank with a very leftist social agenda. And it is compliant with Common Core. It is the second consortium that makes Common Core compliant testing. They're funding the schools based on how well students do on this test that is provided by AIR. So if you want your school to be funded, your students have to pass the test that's Common Core compliant by a very left-leaning think tank. And the only thing they've done is taken out the words Common Core.
And there was another couple of bills.
Yeah. One of the other ones is SB 188. And that would be, and on the surface, it looks like they're protecting student data from getting out to anyone in the public, and that they're lowering the data points that they're going to be data mining from our students. And that is something that the grassroots was very angry about, is this data mining.
Right.
So they put up this bill and they said, you know, well, nobody is going to get your students' information. And they're going to be talking about this on the campaign trail. But when you look at the bill, there's a lot of exemptions on who can get your child's information. And it's any contractor, consultant, or basically anyone under FERPA, which is anyone who does business with the school district or the Department of Education, can request information on student data. So basically anyone who ever does business, the painting contractor who paints the building at your children's school, could, in essence, ask for your child's information and get it.
So once again, the same as the first bill you mentioned, on the surface of it, it looks like they're doing something, but when you look underneath, they haven't done anything at all.
No, the 400 data points that they were taking from our students originally under Common Core has now been reduced to 397.
Oh, much better.
You know, they've exempted political affiliation, voting history, and religious affiliation. But that's it, out of 400 data points.
Yeah. And when it comes to the curriculum of Common Core, they have done nothing there either.
No, they put up a bill. It's SB 864. And what that would do is allow, and you're going to hear this too, they're going to be on the campaign trail saying, no, all the school districts now have local control. And they do. Local control of you know, picking and choosing any of the educational materials for their school districts. But again, their funding is reliant on how well they do on the Common Core compliant testing. So if your school wants to stay funded and funded at the same level, you have to make sure that your children are performing well on this test administered by AIR. So it's going to be a Common Core compliant test. There's only two book companies that make Common Core compliant tests, Common Core compliant curriculum. And so you can choose the other, but if your students don't do well on those exams, you're not going to be funded in the next year.
And this goes for private schools too.
Yes, and they are moving that to private schools as well.
Now, are you familiar with what they've done in other states to try to rid themselves of Common Core, for instance, in Oklahoma and New Mexico? Or not New Mexico, I mean North Carolina.
Yeah, and there's still some legislation working through each of the states, but some states are just saying no, and they're within their rights to do that.
Okay, so there are some state legislatures who are actually doing something, not like ours, who are acting like they are doing
Absolutely.
Something.
Indiana's one, Missouri, yeah. I think, is another.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, when we come back, folks, we'll have more from Danielle. We're going to get a wrap-up of the Seminole County vote, some very interesting numbers from Grant Malloy, and Lair's closing comments. So we got a lot to go. Please don't go away. Okay, and it's time for Lair's lesson to us, as he gives one to us every Sunday night. So here we go with Lair's closing comments.
Yes, like so many yearly events, Father's Day is here again. Being a dad myself, I'm rather partial to this holiday, even though it makes me a little sad, since I can't enjoy it with my dad, who's been gone for more than a decade. I have to wonder if this is another holiday of those celebrated holidays created entirely by the greeting card companies. Then every tool manufacturer, tie company, and Joseph A. Bank jumped on board to capitalize on the need to make dad happy. and little children will craft pencil holders and useless artsy doodads that their fathers will hold on to long after the tools have stopped working and the clothes have gone out of style. All this in an effort to show appreciation for the patriarch. Now, many may wonder about the need for such a national recognition. Becoming a dad is easy, even pleasurable, if all you are talking about is the act. After the child is born, the payback ensues. Fatherhood may be the most expensive enterprise a man can undertake, not only in cost, but labor and time. Becoming a father alters dreams and goals. The climb up the mountain is much harder, with hungry, crying, needful baggage weighing you down. Life was so much easier and less responsible without those fleshy leg irons and manacles. But then you look back at your own childhood growing up with Dad, and you can never imagine being the burden you think your children are. Yes, burden. There, I said it. So why do so many put up with this procreation thing? The cost analysis nearly always goes for the red side of the ledger. Then there's that pesky emotional investment. Some men lose their hearts at the first sight of their offspring. Others take a little longer. Sadly, there are those who never do. They walk away from the table after dealing out their chromosomes, effectively folding their hands. They can never win because they never play the game. But this is a game where the good guys always win, because true fathers are all in. A boy becomes a real man when he understands what responsibility and true happiness are and will do almost anything to protect those ideals. This holiday is for them. Now, I realize there are plenty of men who have a mate they care deeply for and no children, and they're completely happy. But they are missing something. It's been said that children are the glue that holds relationships and marriages together. It's true if glue is the experience, joy, and heartbreak that families endure. Today, that glue has a tougher job with the advent of multiple and non-traditional parents stressing those bonds. But Father's Day and all its celebration begs a different question. Is Father's Day really all about honoring Dad? Or is this the day good fathers should thank and appreciate those who have blessed them with the wonderful opportunity to be a dad? For them, there is the understanding that just being a father is one of life's greatest rewards. That we need to be thankful, not for the tie, but for the opportunity. For at that moment, we show our greatest gratitude for the father of us all. I miss you, Dad. Have a great Father's Day, my friends.
Boy, goes for me too. Great work there, Lair. Of course, Lair and Carl will be back with us next week, and I hope you folks will join us as well. And please stick around for John Butler Book Show on 950 WTLN. He's going to have Danielle Alexandre and also Grant Malloy on his show as well. And also here with Danielle this evening is Alex Snicker, who's also with Liberty First Network. Alex, thank you for being here with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, you guys also have a radio show of your own, I understand.
On Fridays from 9 to noon, we do the Liberty Underground show, and that's done over in the Tampa Bay market.
And can people listen, though, on their computers over here?
You can go to our website, which is 1787network.com, and you can go listen live there. You actually will listen to the YouTube channel from there, and then there's a local AM station that it's on as well that I won't mention on your air.
Okay. All right. We appreciate that. What kind of things y'all talk about? Is it political talk, news talk like we do?
It's all political talk. It is done mostly on local stuff, some on national stuff, and it's just really kind of what we have going on in our own unique perspective on the issues themselves. And really what liberty means to people, and to really try to iron out these issues and show them from a liberty perspective, which I think is sorely missing in some places, but seems to be alive and well here.
All right. Well, we try to keep it that way. That's the 1787network.com. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
1787network.com. Just know okay. the in front of it.
Okay. Yeah, all right. 1787network.com. And of course, libertyfirstflorida.org is how you can get involved with the Liberty First Network, which is doing great work. And you guys, please keep it up. And we'll definitely make you regulars on our show because, you know, this is the sort of information our listeners crave.
No, absolutely. We'll be on anytime.
All right. And folks, please be warned when these Republicans come around seeking your vote, telling you all these nice stories about how they're fighting Common Core, it's nothing but a bunch of common crap.
Here's a question for you, Danielle, before we head out.
Sure.
We've had calls a lot of times from people who want to know about judges. What do the judges stand for? How do I figure out which one to vote for?
Do you guys,
is there anything you guys do in that area?
It's very difficult because the Florida statutes actually forbid a judge from telling you anything that may give you an idea of how they would rule on a particular issue. Now, for some, that actually keeps them more impartial because you do have to take everything by a case-by-case basis. But you can really, you know, you have to ask very general questions and things like that. It is very difficult, but there are groups that are starting to get lawyers together to actually rate the judges so that you'll have more information. But when they're on the campaign trail, they're actually legally not allowed to tell you anywhere that they would stand that would give you an inclination of how they would rule.
Makes it tough to know who to support.
Mm-hmm.
That's Liberty First Florida, LibertyFirstFL.org to become a part of the Liberty First Network. And to listen to Alex and Danielle's radio show, go to 1787network.com. Grant, I'm sorry, we'll have you back on the show and we can talk a little bit about the wrap-up of the Seminole County tax thing, but am I not correct when I say that if it hadn't been for the employees like school teachers and others of Seminole County, that that tax would have went down resoundingly?
There were so few voters that when you take out the family members and the government employees, I say the thing went down. We only lost by 2,000 votes.
Yeah.
It was very close, and I'd be happy to call in this week
and do
a little overcap of the Seminole County sales tax because it's coming to Orange County.
It sure enough is. All right, and coming to you folks right now, here in just a few minutes, is John Butler Book, Up the Dial at 950 WTLN, and Armed American Radio with Mark Walters. Night, everybody.
Celebrating 50 years as Apopka's hometown station. 1520 WBZW, Apopka's hometown station. A division of Salem.